This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, happy Monday and happy St. Patty's Day. We hope you're having a great day. It's a beautiful day in the A. And I'll say this, Mike, the Falcons continue to sign their own and bring back some guys that they felt like were very productive. And that includes Kentavious Street, who was re-signed defensive tackle. We talked about, you know, needing more help up front. Again, this doesn't preclude them from going out and drafting a defensive tackle, guys. It just means they like the way Street played. He's affordable, and he comes back. So I think, again, these are smart moves by the Falcons. These are not, you know, wow moves where you go, oh, I get overly excited. We're hoping that happens draft night.
Yeah, and I know it's kind of weird because it's always, and we say this every time we get into this defensive line, hard to sort of quantify what exactly you're looking for. They're looking for a guy that's part of the rotation. And you know, starting back with the Giants of the late 2010s, you know, the NASCAR package, all that stuff, guys want to have lots of dudes, keep them fresh. And that's why we picked up that guy. Who's that guy we picked up? Not the actress. Morgan somebody? The Morgan Fox.
I said Morgan Fox.
I said Megan Fox.
That's right. That's right.
Got really excited there for a second. But Morgan Fox is a rotational guy, you know, and it might be one of your sort of third down and long kind of specialists to come in. But you got to have some bodies. And Kentavious Street, you know, again, one sack last year. But again, don't look at the numbers. He is a rotational guy, and they're happy with him.
So a few things that we will definitely dive into if you're just joining us. Selection Sunday happened yesterday. The NCAA tournament starts, in essence, tomorrow, the play-in games, guys, and there'll be two on Tuesday, two on Wednesday, and then the tournament itself will start on Thursday, and our coverage begins at 7 o'clock after the show. We will have full coverage of the NCAA tournament throughout the next 3 weeks and into the championship game. Obviously, this year is going to be in San Antonio, the Final Four. But, Mike, 14 teams selected from the SEC, so we will dive into that as part of our Strong Arm story coming up here in less than 10 minutes, and Georgia is included as one of them. But let's talk about the other decision that was made over the weekend in regards to our Falcons. The Falcons kept veteran quarterback Kirk Cousins on their roster past 4 p.m. Saturday. So this is what triggered Saturday. And I know many of us were weather aware and worried about all the other stuff that was going on. But it triggered the guarantee on a $10 million roster bonus that was due for 2026. I had told you guys that this was going to happen and he wasn't going anywhere. And it did. But many of you still are conflicted, Mike, as to why would the Falcons do this if, in fact, they still want to trade him? If they want to move him, why are you paying him an additional $10 million?
They are going to play this game of poker all the way through, presumably, the start of camp. Now, that where it gets weird is you and I are of the opinion we don't think they're going to have him in camp. For all the strangeness and the controversy and the questions that will be asked, and is that the dynamic you want to have in your quarterback room as you turn the keys over to Michael Penix Jr., from what I read, if we trade him, and that does happen here this offseason, then that team will be worried about that $10 million bonus. It basically comes back off, so it's really no big deal. And as you said, they're willing to play this game out. The long game here is to hope that somebody whether it's going to be, it wouldn't be the Vikings. They're talking Aaron Rodgers potentially. Could be the Steelers. Could be the Browns. Long shot, maybe the Giants. But somebody's going to find themselves, as we said, without a quarterback, whether it's through the draft, Carl, or the other people that are out there. Maybe the Steelers don't want to get back in bed with Russell Wilson. Maybe he winds up with the Browns. And if Aaron Rodgers goes to Minnesota, which really seems crazy, but they maybe see, hey, J.J. McCarthy is still as good as he looked in preseason, coming off an injury. I get Aaron Rodgers in here. My team's ready to go.
Yep.
We had a team with Aaron Rodgers that maybe could have beat the Rams, or at least done better than what Darnold did.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I don't know if revenge is in Aaron's heart to try to get back to the Packers just a little bit. That division has gotten a lot better. I do believe the Bears are on the come, but the Lions and the Packers are still better than everybody else, and the Vikings obviously won 13, 14 games last year. So, you know, that team is ready to win as well. I think that is a tough division if he decides to go there where, you know, Mike, he went to the Jets, and they thought, oh, well, it's just the Bills and everybody else. We can maneuver, and he never really did anything there. Either way, that decision is yet to come down. The decision that has is that this trigger happened. And for Kirk Cousins, guys, financially, the Falcons, and I said this earlier, there's lots of reasons for us to be upset with this team and certainly, you know, how things have gone. But I actually think this is a smart move. And with the money that is already invested in Kirk Cousins, the Falcons owe him $27.5 million for 2025, whether they keep him or release him. So if you add Penix's salary onto that, in essence, we have our two quarterbacks on the roster. If this is going to play out the way it might play out, for $30 million, okay? Just a round number. It's a little bit less than that, but that's what we're talking about, and that's how the Falcons are viewing this. And so, for my money, this makes more sense than taking a $65 million cap hit.
Right. Now, the other thing is, a couple guys are asking us, how does this play out, you know, moving forward? Well, as we said, we just gave you the scenarios. There's only so many teams out there that might be interested in him. He asked Arthur Blank to trade him to a team where he can start. There's only, like, three teams now that could do that, okay? And he has got the no trade. So if we try to move somewhere he doesn't want to go, he can say no. The other thing is, and this would be something which personally I don't even give a flip if he doesn't get what he wants, does he sit out? Does he not show up for camp? And basically he holds out. Now that would be interesting. I don't know how his agent plans on playing that because Florio wrote an article today, Mike Florio in Pro Football Talk, basically saying that he's got to stop being a nice guy. Well, I don't know what nice guy you think Kirk Cousins is. I thought it was a bunch of nonsense to basically say you were not injured, then only to come around and say, no, I was injured, and make your team look like a bunch of chumps. But either way, how else do you play it? What leverage does Cousins have?
Well, under the new CBA, that means he's losing a lot of money if he sits. Okay.
So I don't see that happening because one thing Kirk Cousins has never, ever done in this league is lost money.
So you're right. So that would be a real conscious decision by him to say, I'm going to lose $27 million, basically. I don't know if he's going to do that. The other thing about being real tough, and this is what I think Florio is alluding to, and I've heard this from other folks too, in and around football, is at some point he's got to become a jerk. And the reason is it will force the Falcons' hand to potentially move him faster. And that's something that we think the move to not tell your teammates or your team that you're injured is a jerk move. But the idea of that, I'm going to act like a lot of other players, Mike, who in the past, we've seen it happen, who want to be traded and they stomp their feet and they cry and they make a lot of noise, which Kurt has not done in his career,
causes
the team to say, we don't need that distraction. Let's get him the hell out of here, which he's not done. And I think that's what Florio's talking about. I don't know if that's in Kirk Cousins. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if that's something he wants to do and how he wants to be portrayed.
But this, like I said, I mean, the leverage here is, I mean, if there's only three teams that are available. Now, again, after the draft, perhaps some people recalibrate. They look at their quarterback room and they feel, okay. You know, I thought the Colts might have been a nice place for Cousins. They went and got Daniel Jones, right? Other guys have gotten swooped up. Backup quarterbacks, you know, the Pringle.
Every place we thought, it's been like, boom, uh-oh. Boom, somebody lands.
The Raiders got Geno Smith. Seattle, of course, signed Sam Darnold. I mean, the Rams got back with Matthew Stafford. Everything, thinking for a minute he might leave. The Giants don't really have a guy that, you know, they're prepared to roll with. The Browns, but the Browns don't have all the money. That's the thing. The Browns aren't going to trade. That's why I've always said I can't see the Browns trading for Kirk Cousins knowing how jammed up against the cap they are. You trade, his contract becomes your contract, and that's the cap hit you're going to deal with.
What do you guys think? And are you mad about this? Because you're saying, well, we shouldn't be paying him extra money if he's not going
to
be here.
Well, what about this? Do the Falcons then, as you and I were talking about last week, buy a pick? That was it Albert Breer that put that out there, I think, on Twitter, that you say, look, we'll pay $12 million. We'll pay $15 million of his 20, whatever it is, 27 and a half, and you give us a third-round pick.
Sure. Sure.
I'd be fine with that.
I would, too, because ultimately the pick is way more important than the money. 404-726-0929 is the number. It's also
But if you want to get this pick in this draft, this has to happen between now and the end of April.
Well, that's why I'm not willing to tell you that he's not going to be here when it's all said and done. 404-726-0929. It's our text line as well if you want to chime in. Here's what I'm saying. There's too much to still yet be determined between the draft, between camp starting and, God forbid, somebody having a catastrophic injury and the team calls, for me to say, yeah, week one, Kirk Cousins is going to be sitting on the sidelines. I'm not willing to tell you that yet because there's too much that's got to play out. And so when we get to a point, Mike, that we're so far along in the summer and all of a sudden now camp's about to break and guess what? The season is 3 weeks around the corner and nobody's called and he's still here. Okay, then we can start to have a real conversation about it. But, like, right now, there's just too many variables.
Yeah. One thing for certain, though, if you're planning on having a season without Kirk Cousins, who's your backup? You know, you got to go get one of those other dudes.
You know,
we've talked about that rogues gallery. I mean, I joked around about Jameis, but, I mean, you got to go spend anywhere from $5 to $10 million for a decent backup these days. So I'm not sure how that plays out. And then the idea that really Kirk Cousins, because Kirk Cousins, he doesn't want to be here. He doesn't want to be the backup. So you're telling me he's going to sit there? So the same guy who told us he's not hurt and then he was hurt is going to say, I'm here to support Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback he never wanted, never expected to be drafted.
I don't know if he'll ever say that, but you're right. And I don't think he wants to be here either.
Hey.
Not when you meet with the owner and say, I want to go somewhere where
right.
I can start. It just, that doesn't make sense. Either way, we're vested. And now we just have to
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And take this as a situation that no matter how much we want whatever it is that we think we need, you know, to happen, we got to wait and see how this shakes out.
By the way, Azeez Ojulari, we were talking about him the other day about other edge rushers. Mm-hmm. Leonard Floyd was the guy we went with. $4 million for 1 year, Chris?
Affordable.
With the Eagles. So a nice, you know, add more depth for that team, which is moving some pieces this year because they couldn't afford everybody off that Super Bowl roster. And then we mentioned it last hour for guys who missed it or ladies in their car. Kyle Pitts went on Instagram earlier today, Carl, to say that he's got a new outlook for 2025. Kyle Pitts on his Instagram, year four had its ups and downs, but we prevailed. Year five, I'm coming 10 times harder than I ever did. Hashtag we ball.
Hope so.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed it at length earlier for guys who missed it, but just, okay.
Yeah, my it's blood pressure's already been up on
it's,
this.
It's a contract year. I mean, I got to be honest. I don't think it does him anything for this to go out there because the most reaction I got from Falcon fans on social media was, well, what would you consider your effort the last 4 years here in Atlanta? And then gets back into the conversation, which a lot of folks feel. Does he have a passion for this game? Is he simply miscast? Or, you know, as we said, we can talk all about quarterback play and coordinators. When does it come back to looking at the man in the mirror and giving max effort, which now he says will be 10 times harder?
Yeah, look, a social media post is nice, and it's encouraging. And for your fans, you know, it gives them the hope that they want to believe that you're going to have another great season. You know who's not putting out a post that says I'm going to come 10 times harder? All the top playmakers in the National Football League. Go look at it. You've seen one from Jamar Chase says, next year I'm coming 10 times harder. You've seen one from Justin Jefferson? You've seen one from Brock Bowers?
Did Jonnu Smith put one up?
I'm asking. You're not going to because those guys show up and they play the way that they need to play. So this is a nice social media post. But as I said, my blood pressure already got it. I'm so frustrated with this whole situation with Kyle Pitts and what I think he is, what he thinks he is, and what he should be every Sunday. And we just haven't seen it play out that way. So I hope he does, Mike, because if he's here, we need him to win. Mm. We need him to be the best he can possibly be. But at the end of the day, like, I told you all last season, I thought he was the key to this offense just taking off, exploding, and it didn't play out that way.
13th in receiving yards. We talked about it earlier. As far as receptions, 22nd in receptions. You know, I mean, it just Austin Hooper had comparable, slightly comparable numbers. Remember him?
He was better.
So it's just frustrating. What are they going to get out of him? Is he miscast in a Zach Robinson offense? Either way, Carl, he's bringing 10 times the heat.
All right. Let's hope so. Coming up, strong arm story of the day. Hey, the Dogs make the tournament. And also coming up later this hour, he was magnificent today. Stay right there. We'll talk about it coming up. Dogs get in the tourney. You know, it was 9 years ago when the SEC only had three teams in the men's tournament. So to put 14 in, congratulations to Greg Sankey, the commish, and all the coaching that went on this year, Mike, across the SEC. It's an impressive feat, and they had more teams than any other conference. Now, with that said, let's talk about the Dogs specifically here, Mike, because they draw a well-known brand in round one on Thursday.
Yep.
But, you know, you got to feel pretty good about the way Mike White and this team has played. And Connor Riley said it at 4 o'clock. If you missed the interview, it's online at Odyssey.com from Dog Nation, saying over the last 4 or 5 weeks, things have just really clicked and guys have gotten better.
Yep, we talked about that. Look, there was a stretch where there were some games where they get blown out by really good teams in the conference, and there were some where they had leads and they just couldn't handle it, both at home and on the road, and then they got dialed in. You know, the Florida win, that was obviously the big one. We talked about that earlier, big resume builder. And certainly, you know, you've got stars. I mean, they got players. They got the depth. They got a bunch of guys that score just under 10, but they've got some pieces. Mm. And how do you handle now the pressure and the expectations? Because I said earlier, we're talking with Connor Riley, people want to buy in. I've been here since 98. I've seen sort of like this roller coaster of Georgia basketball, Carl, where they're always so close on the cusp, and it just doesn't go anywhere. Can this be where Mike White punches through? I don't expect them to. If they could beat Houston, that'd be one of the great upsets of all time. But just get a win in this thing, something to build on.
Yeah, look, a great run is Sweet 16. That's two dubs over this next weekend. And you know, you'll have a lot of people discussing Georgia basketball. But to Mike's point, now that you're in for the first time in a very long time, you just got to win a game and see where things go. I also think the draw of getting Gonzaga is something that people are going to see. And again, most people around the country are not paying attention to Georgia basketball. So they're like, oh, Gonzaga. And they're immediately going to say, that's a route. Gonzaga's going to beat the blank out of Georgia. I don't believe that. I think Georgia has a really good chance to pull off what would be perceived as an upset because it's a 9 versus an 8. I don't think it would be an upset. And I think they have, Mike, they got to play well now, but I think they have everything you need to beat this Gonzaga team, which, of course, then you say, hey, next waiting in line would be Houston. But you got to get past this one first. And I feel like with Auburn, Duke, Houston, and Florida being number one seeds, obviously Florida and Auburn are in the SEC, and Auburn was the number one overall seed. And I want you to hear the commissioner announcing this as the selection committee. And I think it's Mark Zuckerberg. Zucker, who am I thinking of?
Adam Zucker. From CBS.
CBS talking about this as they made the announcement yesterday.
Auburn is the number one overall seed, and they head up the South region, destination Atlanta and beyond. 16 quad one wins. They are a one seed for the second time ever behind SEC Player of the Year, Jahni Broome.
Yeah, so the South region is Atlanta. We get that to figure out who's going to ultimately go to the Final Four. But you could be talking about a variety of teams. Michigan, Auburn, Old Miss, Michigan State. Marquette's really good. We don't know who's going to come out, but everybody, obviously Auburn with the number one overall seed being announced there. Now, this is Bubba Cunningham, guys. He is the overseer of the committee, Mike.
AD of North Carolina. We'll get into their interesting angle into this tournament coming up in a second.
He was talking about why they had to adjust the scheduling based on the facts. There were so many SEC teams involved in this because, again, guys, you had to try to balance this out. This is Bubba Cunningham.
We really had to move people around to minimize the conflict early. And when you have, you know, four different regions, we made sure we only had as most four teams in one region so that we could spread them out the best we could. We had a couple of contingency brackets, and we actually had five, and so we had to go back and then try to rework the bracket a little bit to move them apart to the best that we could. But you're right, 14 teams out of one league in a 68-team bracket is a real challenge to get everybody in there and meet all of the principles that we have about trying to keep the teams apart.
Yeah, the idea you don't want to have like a whole Sweet 16 where it's just SEC on SEC, but hard when you got that many, when a quarter of the tournament is your conference. Now, Texas is in the play-in game against Xavier. Mm-hmm. They got in. Some people, though, are going bananas, and certainly West Virginia is. The governor now, they're going to get the lawyers involved. They're going to have an investigation about why West Virginia, with a 19-13 record, 10-10 in the Big 12, and many more quad one wins. They had six to North Carolina's one. Carolina, a lot of people say, nowhere remotely belongs, even in the play-in game, as Carolina will be playing this week as well to get in. I just felt that a lot of folks feel it's a brand, and the casual fan doesn't know how bad Carolina was this year, but that's a brand that people expect to see in March Madness and the tournament they put him in. Bubba Cunningham, presumably Carl, has to recuse himself like they do in the football playoff committee when his school comes up. But tell that to West Virginia fans who are saying the whole thing stinks to high heaven.
So what happened, and I do believe this because this is why I was hesitant to say Georgia was getting in. When you have upsets in these conference tournaments, usually the highest seed team in the conference, it doesn't matter, pick your conference, Big Ten, ACC, even the lower conferences, usually that team has already got a spot in the NCAA tournament. But when that team gets upset, Mike, that means the team that beat them also gets a spot. And so what happened in this situation for Carolina is the committee says, and I believe this, they were kind of waiting to see what was happening in that UAB-Memphis ACC championship, which is the American Athletic Conference championship. Yeah. If UAB beat Memphis, Memphis was going to the tournament anyway, UAB gets in, guess what? North Carolina is on the outside looking in. It didn't play out that way, which opened up a spot for Carolina to get in. And that's how it was explained. And I do believe that's what happened, but people don't believe that. They think North Carolina got, you know, they got some help here.
Well, again, we talk about strength of schedule when it comes to football. First off, look, again, you know how I feel about North Carolina. They always get the breaks. They had two decades of academic fraud with across all sports programs that the NCAA just basically looked the other way because they're too big to fail. So that's how I feel about that. 19-13 for the Mountaineers, dead even in the Big 12, six quad one victories for the Mountaineers, only one for Duke, who was 1-12 against the elite opponents on their schedule. So a lot of folks feeling that, you know, they're a bigger brand than West Virginia, and that's why West Virginia's at home.
The SEC was the best basketball conference in the country this year, and it wasn't even close. 59-19 against the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Big East. This is why they got 14 teams in. I believe that the champion will be crowned from the SEC. I know we had a guest on earlier, and we're going to talk to Josh Pastner coming up here in 30 minutes, former coach at Georgia Tech, now working with ESPN, about this because the numbers game, first of all, 14 teams, but the best teams this year were from the SEC. And somebody's going to break through, Mike, and whether you think it's Florida or Alabama or Auburn, it may be somebody that we don't expect that played a tough schedule that prepared them for this potential run that they're going to go through in this tournament. So that is a compliment to the SEC, who has finally broken through. And let's be honest, I'm not saying it's going to be 14 every year, but Mike, it should be 10.
Well, I mean, we go back to it. Carl and I were talking about it. You're right. I mean, it was Kentucky. Maybe once in a while Tennessee would get in there. But you're just seeing when Alabama and Auburn are as good at basketball as they are at football. Actually, in Auburn's case, much better at basketball lately. But, you know, the idea that, you know, to say you could have your Iron Bowl national championship, it's actually a thing. I mean, you've got two number ones and two number two seeds for the SEC. I mentioned to Carl a few times today, I got to watch the end of the selection show, and the ESPN guys up there in Nashville just gushing. It's all SEC. There are going to be some upsets. But when you play like Florida, I think everybody, the consensus is that Florida is the hottest team right now playing the most complete brand of basketball. The front court, the back court, the defense. You know, there's the outliers. I mean, Duke, they're not healthy. Malik Brown is injured. Obviously, they were able to win the ACC even with Cooper Flagg all jammed up. But do you buy Duke? I mean, I like Houston. If I'm going to take somebody to maybe be absolutely apple cart of the SEC, I got a soft spot for St. John's. St. John's is a really streaky team shooting. If they don't shoot their jump shot, then they really can't do anything. How's Houston scoring? We know their defense. Can Houston score with those SEC schools?
A little bit sometimes inconsistent. And it's the only reason why I'm hesitant to not say that they could win it all, depending on who they would meet. Listen, if Houston, and I'll give you an example in my bracket, if Houston meets Alabama, which would be one seed versus two, Alabama's the highest scoring team in the country. Something's got to give, Mike. Houston's not going to hold Alabama to 60 points.
Right.
So can Houston then score with Alabama? And I would tell you that that would be the game, you know, within the game, but I probably would lean Alabama in that situation, even though I think Houston is really good. These first few games, they're just going to shut people down. You're going to be lucky to score 45 points against them.
We were talking earlier about those classic 5-12s, and there's a bunch of them in there, and the 6-11, BYU and VCU you were talking about earlier. We was at Seal Brown we had on from the Louisville paper who covers college hoops. 5-12, you got Michigan. And UC's at San Diego?
Yes, it is.
Hey. So there's a couple. I mean, do you always, by the way, when we're doing the brackets, and no one cares, by the way, in your office, don't share that information, but do you do the 5-12s? Do you like always picking one of those upsets?
I pick one every year because the history has shown us it's like 51-3 or something of that nature since they started keeping the tabs on this.
Right.
One of those is going to play out. I think a couple of years ago, no 12s won. So you just, you know, you're rolling the dice. But if you're going to say, hey, tradition, history says 5-12s, this is the game to pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you pick it.
Clemson, McNeese State is one in the Midwest bracket. The other one is Memphis, you just talked about with Penny and his crew. Penny trying to get people to pay his player. literally, Colorado State, that's the other one. And then we were just you just mentioned, I looked up the numbers. It is basically dead even, slight edge as far as Gonzaga and Georgia. Now, you could argue that the WCC, whatever the West Coast Conference they play in, is nothing like what the SEC was this year.
It's not the level of comp.
But if you're looking for shooting, they're better free throw shooters, better three-point shooters. Field goal percentage is just slightly higher. Offensive rebounds, it's an advantage Georgia. Same thing, Georgia does a pretty good job.
If Georgia rebounds and attacks them in the paint, they'll win this game.
Right.
That's what they've got to do. If Gonzaga gets out, Mike, and they're running, and you don't get transition D, and like Georgia can't stop, then it's going to be a hard day. But I think Georgia has a really good chance to pull off. It's not an upset to me, but it will be just based on seeding.
Right on.
All right, man, we got plenty more to dive into. He was unbelievable today. And if you're a Braves fan, you got to be feeling really good about what we saw. You have no idea what we're talking about? Stay there. What a day it was, Mike, for Spencer Strider. And it's funny because Braves fans, they're poking the bear. I mean, it's like, hey, Philly fans, your daddy's back. All the things that you'd want to see from Spencer Strider in his first start this spring. How would you describe it, Mike Bell?
Electric. I mean, we were talking about, well, maybe by the first week in May we'll see Strider. Remember that we had that conversation? Even Alex Anthopoulos was, you know, he was a little optimistic that we could see him in April. But then you see him out there, your first start in spring training, and he looked great. I mean, this guy was dominant, 6 of 8, Carl, striking out the opponents. I mean, he struck out 5 straight batters at one point. And by the way, the velo, and that was our big concern. What is he going to look like with the UR, you know, the different surgery? 97 he hit on the gun today.
So this is how it was. I described it earlier, and I'll describe it to you. First batter, ground out. Next batter, strikeout. 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 Fly out. Strikeout. That's dominant. And, you know, if this was a regular season game, mm-hmm. He's on his way to 12 or more strikeouts in this game, depending on how many innings. But, Mike, the way he was pitching, he was getting out of these innings with very few pitches. And so this is just very encouraging, guys. I don't want to tell you he's going to win the Cy Young or anything, but it's encouraging coming off this injury for the first time we get a chance to see him, and he does this.
Right, because, you know, he had a Tommy John back in the college days, but it was a bone, like a bone fragment. That's what it was, the UCL, the ulnar collateral ligament.
Yep.
Same thing that Brock Purdy had to have surgery on, so it's a little bit different kind of recovery. So that was our concern, because, again, we're not orthopedists. We just play one on the radio, was how is his velocity going to be affected? And it isn't. So that's great. So everything you'd want to see, I don't think you could ask for anything more. You know, if you're Snit and the Braves management right now, how Strider looks.
I'll say this, and again, I'm not sure where you are. We're going to do a big lead up to the start of the season. We'll be at Murph's on opening day and getting you ready for Braves baseball, our home opener, by the way. But I'm encouraged with the starting pitching, and the thing that, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned about is the bullpen potentially, because there'll be some new roles in the bullpen for some guys.
Right.
But I will say this. You know, when Sale and Strider are pitching, you have to feel really good. And you're hoping Ronaldo Lopez, again, can pitch similar. It'll be hard to top what he did last year, but similar to what he did. And, Mike, all of a sudden, you've got your three guys, and then you hope these other guys fall in place. The problem is, and Oren, repeat this for us, because we were talking about Strider. He leaves, and then who comes in today, and what happened?
Ian Anderson. In four innings, he walked four batters.
Right. And it's just, we were talking about him the other day, how he's getting the work in. The velocity is around 93 to 94. But more importantly, you know, does he have the confidence? And today it looked like he was aiming. For lack of a better word, a lot of Braves fans were hitting us and they were listening to it and watching it, streaming it, however you got to see it. But it just seems like he was just not, he didn't have confidence today. I don't know, did he get blown? Did Strider? One guy hit me up on Twitter. I guess he got intimidated by Strider. They're on the same friggin' team. I mean, he's not battling for Strider's job. Strider is going to be one of those guys. But yeah, this is where Ian Anderson, don't spit the bit, as they say in horse racing. Stick with it, man, because there's no more trips to Gwinnett. This is it, you know? So you don't want to be DFA'd Ian Anderson. You want to be in the show, right? And somebody else will pick him up and give him another shot. But yeah, he's got to be able to dial in. One of the other cool things over the weekend, I don't know if you got to see this, the Braves did a split squad, and some of the crew and the better pitchers and hitters, they kind of split. The hitters stayed home. The pitchers went up to Boston to play the Red Sox in Fort Myers. Mm. Did you see how Chris Sale started the game?
No.
A tribute to Louis Tiant, who passed away in the offseason. He does his own kind of modified sort of version. Everybody who's a kid of a certain age, we all did Louis Tiant, where you turn your back to the mound and swing it in. So yeah, Sale said he was always a big fan of Louis Tiant. First pitch, he did a little tribute to him.
Pretty cool. Braves fans, does this amp you up just a little bit more? Because let's be honest, if Mike and I came on here and said, man, he got shelled.
Yeah, like Strider gave up 10 earned runs in three innings. You'd
be losing your mind. The fact that he had these six strikeouts, it just goes, whew, we feel really good. 404-726-0929. We'll grab Grant McCauley tomorrow and start to talk a little bit more about this. Mm-hmm. But this is hopefully the start of really good things to come for Spencer Strider. And, Mike, how nervous do you think Braves management was? Because I heard from one guy who said, we were all sweating
right
when he took the hill today, because we're like, please let this be. And then afterwards, they were standing ovation.
Right. I mean, I literally just had a guy in the text that go, well, it's not 100. Well, you expect to throw 100 his first out? Come on. You guys, I mean, it's just stop. It's a perfect way to get back in. I mean, you could not have had a more perfect outing unless he struck out everybody. As Carl said, strikeout six of the eight guys he faced. That's money. Great to see. So now the good news is takes a little bit of pressure off of Grant Holmes and or Ian Anderson, the back end of that rotation, knowing that Strider looks like he's going to be where he's going to be. They announced that Chris Sale will be the opening day starter. No big surprise there. He is the ace Cy Young Award winner. Did you see the video of, I guess the Pirates were looking for a big dramatic moment when they had their skipper, Derek Shelton informed Paul Skeens that he was going to be the opening day guy. It's like, Skeens, you're going to be the opening day starter. He's like,
I am.
Okay. It was like, okay, bro. So it wasn't like, it was almost like Nuke LaLouche. Like, okay. It was nothing really special because he's that kind of a low-key guy. But the flamethrower for the Pirates will be, needless to say, their opening day starter.
404-726-0929. You guys can hit us up. Again, not overhyping it. Just very encouraging. And this is what we needed to see from Spencer Strider. As far as Strider today, he said it's like a reward sprinkled on the pathway, kind of. Mm. That's how I view it. That's is what he said about this outing today. It's also just good to kind of test the work you've been doing. And I think to get out there and at some point, you know, it's game speed. You can really analyze how you've been working in these bullpen sessions and to go through the full routine, hear the national anthem, do all the stuff that you would normally do. He says it felt good. So, wants to keep building. But you guys know this, or maybe you don't. But Strider is a very analytical dude. And his approach to stuff is sometimes you would think if you talk to him, it might be overbearing, but he's analyzing everything about his start, his pitches, location, all this stuff, Mike. So when he answers these questions, this is really him speaking in the way that his head kind of works, because he's one of these guys that analyzes everything.
But I love that. You know, Jason Stark, to your point, has it out there on Twitter earlier today. Grant McCauley, everybody retweeted it. But yeah, saying definitely a kind of a rare emotional moment where I was happy instead of just angry at the world. There you go.
Because it sucks to get hurt. I mean,
yeah, you're just miserable.
Jalen Johnson just tweeted, and he hadn't tweeted in a while, just tweeted, I just want to play, man. it sucks to see your team out there and not be able to help them in the way that you know you can. Right? Jalen's been hurt. We know he's not coming back this season. Strider got hurt last year. He felt like he let the team down. But when you throw 2 2/3 perfect innings and you strike out 6, you're on top of it. To start the season as far as your first outing on 27 pitches, Mike, 23 were strikes.
Right. I mean, as we said, Dave O'Brien's got an article that basically Snickers saying what we just said. You could not have been better. In case you're wondering who's going to catch, they thought they might keep one of the veteran OGs around, Sandy Leon. He gets reassigned to minor league camp. Braves have got 36 dudes in camp right now, and it just seems like Drake Baldwin will be behind the dish to start the season.
Why not?
Let it rip.
Why not? It's the future. God forbid if something else happens this season to Sean Murphy, Mike, he's got to be ready.
Right.
So start again, the season.
And this guy, you know, we sense a little bit, you know, we've talked a lot about how, you know, they've kind of, there's not many trades that they've blown. Like the Contreras trade would be one of them. Contreras was never an elite defensive catcher, but his offensive stats, he rakes, make up for that. If you can kind of find that balance with Drake Baldwin defensively, because already he's hitting great. Looks like he belongs in the show. Small sample size, but looks like he won't. He'll have his ups and downs, Carl. He'll, you know, major league pitchers are to figure out, but this guy can hit.
Yeah, I love this from Chris Sale, who was asked about Strider, and he said, let's not forget, he's still the best pitcher on this team.
How about that?
Because he's right. Just from a talent and stuff standpoint, his stuff is more electric than Chris Sale. Sale's just veteran savvy, being able to know how to pitch to guys. But he doesn't have this stuff, Mike. I mean, and Sale said, look, you look at his stuff, you look at when he's healthy out on the mound, he's the most electric pitcher in the entire game. I would agree with that. It's why we go to the ballpark and say, this dude might strike out 15 on any given night.
Right. I mean, that's why you see even women putting on fake mustaches up in the chop house. So, look, he is the show. It was basically a major body blow when him and Acuna go down and all the other injuries had added up. The good news about Austin Riley earlier in the week, we got that, dodged that bullet. So, yeah, now all of a sudden the worm feels like it's turning, doesn't it, for the Braves?
Well, health is the key. And that's key for any team, but that's – you know, I just saw where, like, Mookie Betts was over there. They're playing in Japan, I think, the Cubs. And, you know, Mookie's not playing in those two games. But, again, it's spring training. But the fact is, this is the thing that will hurt the Dodgers, Mike, as deep as they are. If they have health issues and guys start to go down, you start – it. That's what killed us last year. So I'm just hoping we stay healthy. And if we do, we're going to hit. I'm confident that we're going to hit.
And for you baseball fantasy owners, nerds, maybe you want to rest Mookie Betts to start the season. He lost a lot of weight with a stomach virus.
It's been bad. So,
I mean, that's just, I mean, for those, like, he'll be fine over the long haul, but I mean, that's just the way, nothing like going, you know, halfway around the world and being sick as a dog.
Yeah, I'm just glad it's not us.
I hate the way they start that season, by the way. It's so anticlimactic to play a couple games in Japan,
go back
to spring training.
Yep.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yep.
That's one thing Manfred's got to fix.
Well, look, they're trying to get this exposure, and, you know, everybody's trying to do it. The NFL does it during the regular season. Baseball's doing it, but you're right. It makes no sense. If you were going to do it, Mike, start the regular season over there.
Right.
Let the games count, right?
Yeah. I mean, they go to it. I mean, last year it seems so weird. They did the same. It was in Korea. Do the disconnect. So you're right. Let's have them actually. Really, if you're going to do opening day, you know, here's what you do. Everybody in Japan can get up really, really early or really, really late, and you put the game on at 8 p.m. on whatever network baseball can have a deal with. Presumably, one more year of ESPN.
By the way, Chris, you just said, what, the Fox announcers are not going over there to call this game?
No, nope, they're doing it COVID style.
Oh, remotely.
See, that's just for further states how jive it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically, it's the curtain raiser to your season, and you're doing it literally cheaply and grab ass wise. That's, you know, for lack of a better word. That's, if you're going to do it, make it big. Major League Baseball never gets this stuff right.
All right, guys, that's what's going on with the Braves. And hopefully, again, the other thing we need to see, and we will, but. Like with Strider, you see this in his first outing, and, you know, he'll continue to build on it. Mike, we haven't seen enough at-bats with Ronald Acuna to feel like that with Acuna and his return and where he's going to be. Now, he's putting in the work, and folks down there have been telling me, look, he looks great, and, you know, they're going to be careful with him. But still, it's just like, okay, that's how you want to feel about Acuna, how we feel right now after watching Spencer Strider today.
Now, in case you're wondering about Ronaldo Lopez, he said he's fine. Will make his next start Saturday against the Tigers. He pitched a minor league game on the backfields in his last start. So, you know, again, we make sure everybody's tip-top. That's what Snickers said to the media today.
All right, coming up, guys, we're going to talk to Josh Pastner. He's with ESPN, former Georgia Tech coach. Does a great job on television analyzing all this college basketball stuff. And, of course, he was in it deep and knows a lot about the teams that have been selected for the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk to Josh coming up here at 6 o'clock to help us break down even more of the tournament. And we'll get his thoughts on Georgia. I mean, he's been watching all these teams, Mike. They did a great breakdown, I think it was yesterday, all over the weekend, of a lot of the teams that were either on the bubble or teams that to look out for. So we'll pick his brain a little bit about what he thinks about the tournament.
And for guys who missed it, we started the show talking about a busy weekend here in Atlanta. The other story, because it kind of got lost in the shuffle, Sunday night soccer. Bro, it was about as exciting, Carl, a first half you could have for Atlanta United against Inter Miami. And all these great guys, all these rock stars of soccer on Miami were definitely in their bag about losing to Atlanta in that first round last year. Messi played the game if you're lucky enough to be at Mercedes-Benz. You and I always talk about it. Style makes a fight. If you didn't see it, because not everybody streams it on Apple, but it was, Carl, it was like everything you want in your soccer match to be. End-to-end action, nonstop. Unfortunately, all our big money guys just don't seem to have the connection just yet. So it seems like if you didn't see it, Saba ran into Latte. We had our two attacking players smash into each other with a great goal-scoring opportunity. Brad was basically pulling stuff out of his butt. But unfortunately, it was a late goal that kind of broke the hearts of United fans. But it was still a very entertaining match. I guess reading what I've read from Jason and hearing Mike on the radio, seems like it's a work in progress. It's going to take a while to get this front attack straightened out.
They're still not scoring the way that we expected them to. And these late goal situations, similar to last year.
They left Brad on an island. Brad, if you didn't see the game last night, Brad was literally like in a shooting gallery, like a duck going back and forth. He was pulling stuff out of his tuchus.
I just hate, and it's soccer, it happens, but I just hate when they score, you know, Mike, is time is expiring or, you know, just a few minutes left.
And the ball held in the air like one of those like bad ends of a movie where everybody's like, no, that's how they scored.
That's why I hate to lose that way. I'd rather get blown out, to be honest with
you. Ronnie Dylan's got to figure out all these big money guys because it seems like they're not. You know, you always say stay in your lane?
Roles.
Guys are literally not staying in their lane.
Yeah, got to know your role. All right, coming up, Josh Pastner, ESPN, joins us, and we'll talk tournament with him next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.